And this is where the integral map helps us, because we can see that there are different aspects of ourselves that are arising at any given time. And when we see them, it's like with that Google map thing. When you turn it and see the clarity, you see extra clarity, a deeper insight, a deeper penetration into the patterns of our own being, then we're just more powerful. It's just as simple as that. There's the famous saying from Fritz Perls that awareness itself is curative. I would say that awareness itself is evolutionarily potent, because when we can see ourselves, we are just able to work with ourselves more effectively. So one of the Aqua maps is the maps of the quadrants, and I think most people here have a good working knowledge of the quadrants. But we would just note that for all of us, we're all arising in all four quadrants at any given time. So there's an aspect of ourselves that is in the interior of the individual, that is our own, in my case, Jeffness, where I have my own thoughts, I have my own feelings, I have my own vision, I have my own sort of typography, my own enneotype is up there, just my sort of the texture of my being, and the way I see the world and what I value and what I don't, so that we just get extra clarity there. Now, for most of us in the integral world, one of the occupational hazards of being integral is that there are many visions that appeal to us, right? And we can see ourselves, we have a certain chameleon ability to see ourselves in many different situations and actually be good in many different situations. And so that can be a downside of integral awareness, and it probably is. Once we get this all mapped out, we'll see that that may be a real shadow side or a real downside of the teal and turquoise levels. So in the meantime, it behooves us to be aware of that. Just be aware of our own ability to see ourselves in any kind of a situation, and note that we can use that as a means of not committing to any single one, right? And so that's why in this incubator, you have to make a commitment day one as to which track you're on or how you're actually going to work this system. And we continue to ask you to make decisions and stake your claim and lay your money down. Not that that can't change, it's gonna. This is one of the great things that we know about the world today, is that it's ever-changing, and we'll probably have, adult people like you, Stephen, just new in the workforce, five, six, seven careers that we'll do in our lifetime. And that is, that could be a good thing. So that's one of the things, that's one of the aspects of ourselves that we want to have good clarity on. And then in the upper right, the upper right is our individual exterior. And that's the realm of our behaviors. And that's the realm of our external, my body. And not only my body, but my energy bodies. And at Integral, it's one of the markers of Integral, is that we have a deep realization, or a deeper, let's say, realization of our bodies beyond the physical. That while we may have spent a lot of our lives, tickled by our feelings, and unfortunately for many of us, too much tormented by our feelings and just by the energies that are coursing through our bodies. I mean, if we sit in meditation, we realize one of the first realizations of meditation is that we're hell on wheels. Is that it's progress to realize that you're hell on wheels, because before that you just didn't realize it, but you still were. In the sense that as we look at the body sensations and just the contractions, to be in a human body is intrinsically, to be contracted into a human body is intrinsically painful, especially to the degree that we identify with it. And so, the upper right practices are calling us to release and unfurl our energy bodies And we can. And you know, there are practices that specialize in this. There are age-old practices that specialize in this, such as the martial arts and Tai Chi and Qigong and various movements, dance, acrobatics, where we just become, you know, doing a backflip from standstill. That shows a high level of physical body development, you know, to do that. And one of the lines that we develop on that's actually relatively independent from other ones, we talk about cognitive line, interpersonal line, emotional line, moral line, and then the physical line. And, you know, you often wonder, what's the upper end of the physical line look like? And what it looks like is having an awareness, a functional awareness of one's subtle bodies. And when you do, you begin to unfurl your antenna so that you can receive the subtle bodies of other people. And that you can receive the subtle winds that are blowing through the lands. Right? And that's real. That's not here. Well, not that this isn't real. This is real too. But this is, it's in the right-hand quadrants. The winds of karma in the energetic bodies are real. And so we just become more and more, you know, attuned to that. And here at the incubator, we want to become more and more aware of that in a way that is very, very practical. From a day-to-day, get my work done perspective, where we wake up and we are aware that if we're going to take our work seriously and we're going to commit to it and do it wholeheartedly, then we have to call forth what is essential to do that. And we don't want to bring our lazy body to work. We don't want to bring our convivial body. We want to bring a discipline and a focus. There's a lot of research that shows that the difference between people who really are effective and people who aren't is the ability to focus on a task. As simple as that. Task perseverance, they call it. And that discipline, this is all in the upper right, where we just, as we did this morning on the cushion, we just continue to bring ourselves back to the breath, no matter what is way more interesting at that moment, which, you know, let's face it, most fantasies are more interesting. Most worries are more interesting than just coming back to the breath, until you have that breakthrough where you realize, oh my God, that breath is really interesting, you know. And it's like it's just a movie that just continues to play. And every piece of it is textural and delicious. And so we do that with our work. We bring ourselves back to our keyboard, even though the CNN's on, or even though we have to water the flowers, or even though the kids are tugging at us, or even, you know, whatever it may be. There's no shortage. I need a cup of coffee. I want to, you know, whatever it may be. That just keep us, and, you know, I work with this constantly. I remember back when I had my business and I was, you know, I was in the deep work groove most of the time, that if I went into the office on Saturday when nobody else was there, I could get a day's worth of work done in an hour. There was no question about that. And what happens when we actually can bring ourselves back, it's the same thing that happens on the cushion in meditation, where we actually have some sort of sustained contact with the breath. We call that flow. That is that we have, in a way, we have a subject-object collapse. Normally, in our normal waking life, this is normal waking consciousness, I walk through the world and I am Jeff. There's me, and then there's a world of other, the world of objects. And in flow, I collapse. That object, subject-object collapses. And this is something that we all know kind of instinctively. It's the real basic nature of our being, is this, you know, contact with the timeless and eternal. And sometimes that'll just pop up. You know, we're walking in the sunset, and all of a sudden we just are the sunset. Or we are bringing home our newborn. I remember my friend talking about being driven home from the hospital with her newborn. And she said, it was as if the whole world were stage lit, and that everything was precious. The light posts, the sidewalk, the dirt on the windshield, the baby in her arms. And that's that moment of just the collapse. And there is a, you know, we're collapsing into the loving intelligence, the enchantment, the sparkle of the absolute, which is always here. And we tract around it or within it. And so when we have that flow with our work, and I saw it, actually. I walked around when we were in our track groups. There were people who were so intent and so connected in their communication. And that, of course, we have flow states with each other all the time. Those are extra delicious. And when we do, it's like, it's not you and me, it's us. We're doing that. So you can't get there if your attention is frittered. You can't get there if you're allowing interruptions and you're allowing for distractions. In fact, there's research that shows that it takes about 10 to 12 minutes to enter flow if you are, in a work state. And yet, in a typical day, for most of us, we get interrupted every, two, three, 4 minutes with email or phone calls or whatever it may be. And so what happens is we literally never attain flow. And that's a drag. But, this is not about getting it right. That's what I love about Integral in general, is that it's not about getting it right, actually. It's about moving the ball. That's all. You know, and knowing that you're going to move the ball into a new level of a catastrophe. Exactly. You know, the Buddhists talk about the endless wheel of suffering. We do a little better than that. We have the endless spiral of suffering. But nevertheless, it's still suffering all the way up and all the way down. Actually, just between you and me, I think actually when you get up here, there's just a new relationship with suffering. And that changes everything. What's that in it? It doesn't hurt so much. Yeah. Or as Ken would say, hurts more, bothers you less. And that's when he's talking about particularly relating to the suffering of the world, which, isn't going to go away in our lifetime, at least this one. And then we have the lower left, of course, which is the intersubjective realm. And, there's new sort of qualities, or there's new skills, or there's new markers that come online in the lower left as one moves from green to teal to turquoise. And the basic move is that we stop being mad at everybody. Down here, it's just, endless dueling worldviews. Do you notice that? When you turn on the television, dueling worldviews. The liberals, the secularists, the conservatives, the tribal, warrior or whatever, and, not much going on down here, at least in the big picture. But, and we notice it at the dinner table, and we notice it in our friendships, and we notice it even within ourselves. And I, for one, I know that it's much decried that the level of discourse, public discourse, political and so forth, that it's all screaming heads and basically very tribal politics. It's like, I want my guy to win, and the facts are a lot less important, and that's so true. I mean, each side, or all sides, accuse the other of deep hypocrisy. It's not that we think different things as we move up these levels of development. We think differently as we move up these levels of development. When you're at an amber traditional altitude, you can't, if you're not seeing the devil at play, you're not doing your job. Right? And so if you try to talk people at traditional into some idea of one world or we're all, you know, it's just, I don't know if you've tried it, but good luck with that. And this is, of course, the home of fundamentalism. The idea that there's a transcendent truth beyond my own selfish impulses. Big time progress. So that's why, you know, from an integral perspective, we're not mad at them. We don't think they're off base. We think they're traditionalists. And we think that they can be healthy or unhealthy, that they can be problematic or not problematic. But we're not here to change them. We're here to love them. This is why, you know, one of the markers of integral consciousness and the emergence, and we can see it in ourselves as we move into, you know, the integral stages in the lower left, is that we develop a pastoral view of the world, a pastoral disposition of the world. We had a community event here, a couple years ago. And there's this man who comes, who's a pastor of a small church up in northern Colorado, and he will sometimes make the two-hour trek to integral events because he's an integral, you know, he's got it, and he is grabbed by it. And he's got his church. And he comes here, and I remember that we were talking about, you know, how to pastor, and we're talking about the pastoral relationship. How do we pastor to people who are at different stages of development, which is what a pastor has to do? And he said, what I do with my congregation, he says, I'm not trying to teach them integral. I'm not trying to do it, you know. He says, I try to be a non-anxious presence in their life. And I wanted to bow, you know, to this guy. I thought, oh, fuck, you know, to be a non-anxious presence. And that's not about, it's not about pretending we're not fearful and anxious and not pretending that we don't have these structures within us. We do. But it's that we are friendly with them, even in ourselves. And that is, it's like a good grandparent. It's that same, that pastoral thing is the same as a good grandparent. When a good loving grandmother or grandfather sees the grandchildren fussing and fighting and, you know, pulling each other's hair, are they mad at any of them? No. They separate them. They do what they can. You know, they try to, you do what you can. They're 7 years old, for God's sakes. And that's one of the things that's difficult about being an integralist, and we talk about owning our genius, or it's owning the levels of development that we've achieved through no fault of our own in many cases. It's like Ken says, we don't know why people develop. That we don't need to take credit for it necessarily. It just seems to be that, as there has always been, there's a point to the arrow. You know, the erotic arrow has a point. And there's always some people who are pushing the edge of development. And we don't want to be grandiose about it, but we also don't want to be coy about it, because that's not going to do anybody any good either. And so, you know, we own it, and we practice it, and we are aware of it. That's, again, awareness itself is really all we need to do. And so we notice ourselves as we're making relationships. We notice it when we're looking at the people that we're teaming up with in our businesses or for our projects. We can't do the projects that we're all talking about here in this room and on the wall. None of them can be done by ourselves. We have to get good at working with other people in this new environment. And this is where we get into a little bit of the lower right, is that it's a new world. You know, we as particularly as evolutionaries are invited, are called to create that new world. And one of the things that we see is that the ways that we relate to people and the ways that we form and unform alliances and teams in this new ever-changing world is just there's nothing wrong with it. It's full of all kinds of good new options and opportunities. And so we, you know, want to pay attention to that. That most of us will never work in an organization where we're going to stay in the same department or the same company for the rest of our lives, like my dad did. My dad worked with the same people in the same department of the power plant for 45 years, as did most of my uncles and a couple of my aunts who worked. And that was not that long ago. It's my dad. And I have, you know, just made it up as I went along the whole way. And it's great. There's both ways to do it. But it's a little less secure. It's a little more shaky. It's a little more uncertain. And it also calls on us to notice when we really have somebody, when we notice somebody in our field that we can really relate to and work with, you know. And we want to, you know, bring that person along. And that's part of the leadership and part of, you know, what it is we're trying to do. So we, in a way, as we look forward at the ways that things are changing, I think that we have to, on one hand, raise the bar for ourselves. That is to call on ourselves to be as disciplined, as clear, you know, disciplined, clear, to relate with people with as, you know, with as skillfully as we can. And, you know, that's another thing I would say about the lower left is that when we deal with people from an integral perspective, let's not forget that all of these stages are included. And, you know, this is just in general, that the basic principle of evolution here, cultural and consciousness evolution, is that as we move up these levels of development, they stay with us. And so as teal turquoise operators on a good day, at least aspirationally, we want to be aware that we have red energies in us. You know, I mean, we notice it all day long, how we push up against each other and, you know, just assert ourselves. But the key is, and this is where the martial arts come in handy, if you have to cut somebody's head off, you want to do it in a really clean cut. You know? You don't want to miss. You don't want to have to do it two or three times. You know, you don't want to hack it off. And you don't want to enjoy it too much. That's the other sort of teaching around that. So you cut somebody's head off with compassion and, you know, no hard feelings. I just have to make this stand. I just have to, you know, whatever it may be. Yeah, so, you know, we want to own those energies, and we want to use them deliberately, but not be afraid to use them when necessary. And the energies of amber, the energies of what would that be? What would we want to make sure that we have online and healthy from an amber structure? Ethics, yes. Just basic fairness. You know, that's real. I mean, and kids grow into that, where there's just has to be really fair.
Oh, and the police.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And you know, the Boy Scout, Girl Scout, that rules, right and wrong, good and bad. Those are important. What else do we want from that structure? Discipline, faithfulness. Yeah, discipline itself is, here it's about getting up and doing your work and being part of the team and being a good citizen. We want to be good citizens. You know, we get lost from citizenship sometimes as we move up because we just sort of take for granted that this, especially those of us who live in the developed world, you know, we just take for granted that this system is solid and good and going to take care of us. And we've had some, you know, shocks to the system. And so we have to be, you know, good people, good citizens, and fair to each other, and ethical. and obedient in a way. I mean, what does it mean to be obedient when you're post, you know, traditional? You know, Boulder's very green and, you know, fuzzing around up in here. And it's very difficult to get anybody to actually say, this is the way it's going to be. And if they, you know, would dare to, of course, we would have to have several hours of processing. Just to make sure that everybody's, you know, nobody's been marginalized, or no aspect of anybody has been marginalized. That's the amber orange critique of green. We just did the ha-ha ungreen, and that's great because that's what we do. And of course, there's great intelligence to that, to not wanting to marginalize anybody or any aspect of anybody. It's just, yes, Annette. Well, narcissism comes online big time as we move into modern and postmodern. Okay, here, there's not a lot of impulse to introspect. You're to be obedient and be good citizen and all of that stuff. I know my parents were mostly traditional. They didn't really care about my interiors. I mean, they did, but they really cared about my report card. And they really cared about how I behaved. And I see my friends now, my generation, and how they're parenting from more of a green perspective. And they're intensely interested in their kids' interiors. And so what is it for a kid to have their parental, and really the whole society that they're, you know, the schools and so forth, are intensely interested in their interiors and how they feel and how they're, you know, what is right for them. And so there's what I think is that kids today have, especially kids who are raised in this milieu, which just sounds like you're talking about, they're just used to that. They're used to people paying attention to all way more aspects of them than were paid to attention to before. I'm not sure that that's not evolutionarily potent. I'm not sure that even though from different perspectives and from a narcissism scale, which there's no question that kids are off the charts on the narcissism scale now compared to where they were in the 50s and 60s in lots of ways. No question about it, and it looks really bad. I'm not sure that it is necessarily. I'm not sure that the next world, the world to come, doesn't require that kids have the capacity of knowing the territory of their interiors in ways that our generation and previous generations just didn't have any concept of, you know. And evolution is beautiful but not pretty. Let me just throw out a couple things that might help. One is that egocentrism can look like that. So, you know, just the inability to see the other in general, and this was, you know, the case for a lot of human history. I mean, we could see our clans and so forth. So there's that. That's the other thing. And then there's just basic pathology that would be almost more of a borderline personality disorder where kids just didn't get the kind of nurturing they need. So they just, that never really got traction. And that's different. And that can also look like narcissism. We're talking more, I think, when we talk about that, you know, 20, 30, 40% of teenagers are test as narcissists on the narcissism things, I think we're talking about this. I think we're talking about something else. We're talking about cultural. And what happens here, so this is I am. This is I am powerful. And this is, we're moving up the agentic memes. I am powerful. This is I am somebody. I am somebody special. Before that, it didn't really matter who you were as an individual. And now it does. And so that just, by definition, starts getting more introspective and I care more about myself in that way. So, and we want that. I mean, even as we're working on our projects, I mean, we want to have that sense that, you know, I got to be me. Whatever I'm doing here, it has to express my own unique, in all of time and space, essence. Or else it's just not going to be good enough. People up here aren't satisfied with just being a cog in the machine. You know, they want to be, and especially as you move up here, where it's just the sensitive self comes online. And we want to feel, and we want to feel each other. We want to rehabilitate all of the people who have been left behind. I don't know if I mentioned it here, but I think it might have been on the Sunday introduction. But one of the great things that Green does is it rehabilitates all of the people who have been left behind in the earlier stages. So here we have red divides the world into the predator and the prey, the strong and the weak. The amber worldview divides the world into the good and the bad, or the saints and the sinners. Orange divides the world into the winners and losers, and the, you know, ruthless between the two. Green says, come ye all sinners. You know, come all losers, come all weak, and be part of the system. Thank you, Green. Thank God for that. You know, as Claire Graves says, if you don't go through Green and fully download it, you know, adequately download it, you're not worthy. You can't really keep going. And so we laugh about Green because it's so silly. No. Well, we laugh about Green because those of us who are pushing off of Integral, every stage pushes off and kind of, you know, is mad at the one before. That's evolutionarily potent to be mad at and sick to death of the one that you're leaving. And so we can be. But, you know, we have to acknowledge that for those of us sitting in this room, it's not going to be okay for us to do work that is not for the good and gain of one and all. It's just not going to be good enough. And that's a Green download, and thank God for that. You know, so we want to be aware of that. We want to pay attention to that and make sure that that's, you know, online with what we're doing. You know, we're also, we want all of that magic and enchantment and healing and all of the stuff that is real down here. In Magenta Tribal, we want to bring that back, too. And so we want the best of all of this online, and I think in the sacred world to come, which is not so far away, dear Lord, perhaps, we will have ready access to all of this, all of these powers, including this one, which is basic, just awareness. Awareness prior, even down here, awareness prior to thought. What's that, you know? And that we practice sitting, you know, just sitting. Awareness prior to thought. We can get that. That's right there. That's no problem if we just take a minute, you know. So we want all of the magic, the power, the, you know, obedience, the transcendent, the special, the expression, the creativity, the individuality, the, you know, brotherhood and sisterhood. All fully accessible. Down here, it's more or less monoperspectival. You take one worldview, one perspective. It starts breaking it up and getting frothy here. But at Integral, rather than being identified with any single perspective, we practice taking this perspective, and we can actually do this as a practice. Take that perspective, look through their eyes, look through their eyes. We begin to identify not with any single perspective, but with this space within which perspectives are arising. Right? You know the difference? There's a newer space of consciousness that actually accommodates all of these perspectives in an open space. And without even trying, we know what is skillful and what isn't. We know what to draw from in any situation, because that space is not only free-flowing and infinitely accommodating, it's also loving and intelligent. And I don't know what to say about that, except that I'm very happy about that. And that is the, you know, loving intelligence that animates the whole system. And that is, we begin to see that. We begin to see that this open perspective has intelligence. And then we begin to see that it's actually our intelligence. And then we're getting into this territory here where we're just, you know, identified with life itself and less identified with this particular wave in the ocean that is arising, as in my case, Jeff. It's very difficult to talk people up or to talk people. You can't talk people out of their structure. You can die trying. That's your, you have those two choices. You could either, you know, not try to do that, or you can try to do that and die trying. But what you can do is with that non-anxious presence and just the ability to be the, as Claire Graves said, the universal donor. That's what he talked about as the character, is one of the markers of the teal turquoise structure, is that we can give blood to anybody and they're fine, you know, because we can see through their eyes and not be mad at them. And there's just something that's absolutely magical about that. That itself is evolutionarily potent. It has the values, magnetism of goodness, truth, and beauty that is the best we can do.